Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice. This week, I want to start out talking a little bit about what's going on with the Supreme Court nomination. We have an opportunity as a country to nominate a justice who is going to look at the Constitution as the guiding document of whether or not a law is constitutional or not. What we see very clearly from our friends on the left is that they rule by the courts. The reality is, if they were to just be honest about their opinions and where it is they want us to go as a country, they would never have any type of success. I mean, we're not a socialist country, but their party, the Democrat Party, is absolutely moving in a socialist direction. I don't think anybody can deny that. We see the most recent win in the primary in Queens, New York. They're making a big deal out of it. And this young woman, she seems like a very nice young woman, but her point of view seems a bit naive and immature. That could have something to do with her age. Not that 28-year-olds aren't mature and smart, but this particular woman's point of view, as expressed through her own words, seems immature and naive. And when you combine that with a socialist tend, it does not portend well for what she would have happen to our country. I think I've seen a couple of things recently, people talking about saying, well, we just still have not done socialism correctly. If we did it correctly, it really would be the utopia that they all imagine it to be. The reason it cannot be a utopia is because each and every human being, while special and unique, are exactly that. Special and unique. And you cannot have any kind of a legal system or governmental system that demands everyone have equal outcome. You know, socialism does not raise everyone up, it lowers everyone down. And this is what's unfortunate. Now, our friends on the left, as we have said many times before in our last program, I think my point of view is pretty clear, that I think many of my personal friends and family members that I know and I love dearly, and they see socialism, whether or not they understand it's socialism or not, they're calling it something else, but they see what the Democrat Party is doing and they say, it would be better if we just shared everything, if the rich people, if we just had them pay more so that people at the bottom could have more. On its face value, that sounds great. Gee, you know, if I have $1 million, if my income is $1 million a year, and I live on $1 million, now I can live in a nice house, I can go on a nice vacation, I have good food, I have nice cars, I'll have nice things with $1 million a year. I don't think anybody can deny that. But if I only had $900,000 a year, would that drastically, negatively affect my lifestyle? Well, to somebody who's making $50,000 a year, they would have to look at that and say, are you kidding me? If you make $1 million and we tax you $250,000, you still have $750,000 a year to live on. That has to seem like an astronomical amount of money to somebody making $50,000. Now, no doubt, an income of $750,000 or $1 million is a large amount of money. And yes, you can live comfortably on $750,000 to $1 million. There's no question about it. But what I think my friends on the left fail to see is that that is not their money to decide what to do with it, nor is it their position to tell somebody how much they should make or how much is enough. Because I'm sure that for my friends that make $50,000 and they see a guy making $750,000 and they say he has more than enough, he can certainly afford to pay more tax, there are people who are making $35,000 a year who see my friend at $45,000 and say, hey, I'm making it on $35,000. You got $10,000 more than you need. It is all relevant. You know, wherever you are on the scale is relevant to your lifestyle. And it's not anybody's business to tell anybody else how much they should make, how much is enough to live in, how nice of a house they have. That being said, let me also look at it this way. I remember as a young person, before I got married, I was doing all kinds of jobs. You know, in my family, not everybody went to college. That was just not something that happened in my family group. People went to high school, graduated high school for the most part, not everybody, but for the most part, everyone graduated high school. And then throughout high school, you found different kinds of jobs, things that interested you. Some of my cousins are mechanics and they love working on cars. I was a landscaper for many years because I liked being outdoors. I liked working outdoors. Some of my best friends were landscapers. And they turned those into big businesses, making a lot of money. But in my family, basically you bounced around from job to job till you found something you liked and you made the most money you could. So as a young person, I was married and my wife and I were probably making $15,000 a year. Now you got to go back here to 1982, 1981, this time of year, and you're saying, you know, that $1,000 a month basically is what you're making. That seemed like a lot of money, $1,000 a month to us. And I remember my wife having this conversation saying, okay, I need to find a job that pays $18,000 a year. Could you imagine if I could find a job that paid $18,000 a year? That $3,000 extra would change our lives. And it really would have at the time. And I was searching around. I did all kinds of things when I started out. I landscaped. I sold waterbeds. They were really popular back then. I sold waterbeds. I sold Cutco knives. You know, I bought the kit and I started selling knives. I sold cars. I did all kinds of things. And eventually I found my way into law enforcement. Within a year or so of that conversation about finding a job that paid $18,000, and I got hired by a police department. And the starting pay was $21,000 a year plus benefits. That number, $21,000 a year, was shocking to us. It changed our lives. Now you got to remember, we didn't come from people who were college educated. We didn't go on to careers. We didn't have white collar work. My family almost exclusively were blue collar people, as was my wife's. My own dad, who I've spoken about before, who passed early, my dad ended up being a union electrician and he did really well. And he left the union to start his own business. And that's how we ended up moving to the Jersey Shore from the Jersey City area, which is right next to New York. My dad moved us down here to the shore because it was a better lifestyle than living in the city. He brought us down here. He started his own business. They struggled for a couple of years till the business took off. And next thing you know, our life drastically changed here. My dad, even though as a blue-collar worker, an electrician, with his own business, the business took off and it was shocking. I'll never forget, we went from sparse Christmas, and I say sparse, I mean sparse, which is a story for another day, but it was a sparse Christmas for a couple years in a row. And then the next year, my dad had two Cadillacs sitting in the driveway. We had a pool put in the backyard. We went on a month-long vacation where we drove across the United States and we saw all kinds of sights. And our lifestyle was different. And when Christmas came that year, it was an overabundance of things, which I learned a lot of lessons from that. Even as a little kid, I didn't quite understand it. But as I got older and I was working and I saw what my dad did, he took a chance on his own. Nobody gave him anything. He learned the electrician's trade. He went out and he worked. He was a union electrician. He learned the skills. He learned everything he needed. And then he went off on his own. He took a chance and he went off on his own and started a business, and the business became successful. Unfortunately, life didn't cooperate with that. And my dad passed away at 37 as a young man. Very unfortunate for him, for our family, for everyone. But the lesson that he taught has lasted with me to this very day. So let me go back to my story. So there I was, I get hired as a cop and their starting salary is $21,000 a year. It was shocking, $21,000. I didn't know what to do with all the money. And it was funny because the contract at the time, it was a 3-year contract. and you went up about $5,000 a year in the contract. So I went from 21,000 to 26 to 31 to $36,000 in 3 years. This was double the amount of money I was making just 3 years earlier. It was shocking. So what did we do with that money? Well, of course, we didn't buy a house because we still didn't have enough to do that, but we rented a home that we liked. We enrolled my son Joe, we enrolled him in a parochial school, in a Catholic school, elementary school, because we thought that was the best way to give him the best education we possibly could. One of our goals was, while we were not college educated, although my wife did go to college, she didn't get a degree, and I took some college courses on my own. Neither one of us had a degree. So we're trying to figure out, what are we going to do? How can we help our children have a better life than us? See, this is the real opportunity of the American dream. There's no privilege in my family. My father worked for everything he got. He taught me that. I went out and worked for everything that I've gotten in my life. So we sent my son to Catholic school. That was a big drain. That was a big drain on a lot of our expendable income, because of course, as your income goes up, your expenses go up. So before, when I was living on $15,000, and now I had almost three times that, my lifestyle went up. Instead of having a junk box car that broke down, literally, just about every other day, we had a saying in our family. The most important thing a young Pangaro man can have when he starts to learn how to drive is a good pair of shoes, because your car is going to break down and you're going to be walking. And that was true for me. Even as I worked and I became a police officer, I had done landscaping, like I said, and I had a Scotiabank pickup truck that I had bought with help from my father-in-law. And I patched it together, and I tried to keep it running, and I cut grass with it, and it drove me back and forth to the police station every day. And it broke down. And there was more times than I'd like to remember that on a cold New Jersey February, I was walking up Route 18 in the basically in the rural part of New Jersey, where I was between where I worked and where I live, and I was walking that highway at nighttime after a 3-11 shift, trying to get to the local state police station to see if I could get a ride home. So this long way around the block here to my point is that I lived a lifestyle up to the money that I was earning. Now, I'm sure people at $15,000 saw me making $35,000 and said, I had way more than I needed. If they can make it on 15, I should easily be able to make it on 25, and I don't need that extra 10. So if we look at our friend who's making $750,000 or a million, people who are making $50,000 can easily look at that income and say, even if you cut that in half, if we only took half of your income, you would still have $500,000 a year to live on. Now that sounds like an incredible amount of money. And it is, but at the same time, I know people who make a lot of money and their lifestyle expands to meet their income. Who is to tell them they're wrong? So if you are working at a job making $25 an hour, that's $50,000 a year just about, and you get a $2 an hour raise, should that go to the government or should that go to you? Because living on $50,000 is not easy. It sounds like a lot of money. It's really not. At this point in my life, I've had a police career. I've started several businesses after that. I now have True Security Design, which is doing threat assessments, and we've spoken about that in the past. I do school threat assessments. I do training. Pangaro Training's been out there for almost 10 years now. And I do very well for myself financially and for my family. I have earned every penny of that. Now, my wife and I, we have chosen to donate money to our charity that we like, to the charities that we like. We do dog rescue, because you know what? We love dogs. And I see these commercials of these poor little dogs and they're getting beat. We save them. So we have dog rescues at our house, which costs money. We give money to our church because we're trying to support the church. We also give money to groups that take care of people. I can't tell you how many groups have come through, usually through the church. There was a group the other day for unwed mothers, and they set up homes in New York, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey where these unwed mothers who choose not to abort their babies get to go live. And they let them live there for a year, 18 months. They help them through the birth of the baby. They help them get their GED. They provide them food. They provide them guidance, life skills, help them get a job. To me, this is really worthwhile for my extra money that I choose I want to help somebody with. My point is, even though people see my income and they say, you don't need that much to live. Sure, I could live a much more austere lifestyle, as anyone could. But there's always people who are going to make more than you that you're going to think, hey, they don't need that much. And there's always people that make less than you in the world that you look and go, I don't know how they live. Because we always have a tendency to rise to our income level. So if you're making 50, you live the lifestyle of a person making 50,000. If you make 100, you live the lifestyle of a person making 100. And you really, of course, you could do with less. But at that point, your lifestyle is established. Your children and your family have become accustomed to the things that 50,000 will buy you, 100,000 or 200,000 will buy you. And that's perfectly okay. In America, that's what we should all strive for. We should try and do our best. And then, out of the goodness of our hearts, decide who we're going to help with our income, with our extra money. It should not be up to any groups or any government to step in and tell anybody, you have too much. You have more than you need. So we're going to take that from you and give it to somebody else. That is just wrong. So with our Supreme Court nominations, our friends on the left are losing their minds because they're afraid that there's going to be a conservative court who's going to look at the merits of the laws that come in front of it with a constitutional eye and not with an eye of how do they change America for what people on the left think is a better way to go, whose money you should take, what rules you should make people live by, etc., etc. So that's where we're going to start today. In a little bit, we'll have the fellas from the neighborhood come by and get their opinion on things, but I'd like your opinions. So you know what? Reach out. I have an email here. It's jpangaro@americaoutloud.com. That's the letter J. P as in Peter. angaro@americaoutloud.com. So do me a favor. Send me an email. I'd like to hear from you. I'd like to hear what you have to say. We'll be right back for round two on America Out Loud Network.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
And welcome back to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. You know, before we get going, I want to talk about a couple things. First of all, a good friend of mine is also on this network, and that would be Lieutenant Randy Sutton. Randy is an awesome guy. If you get a chance, listen to his show. I love Randy. He's really smart. He's got a lot of experience in law enforcement. He's a great guy. So our sponsors, A-Plus Technology and Security. They are a leader in electronics as far as anything to do with safety and security. They have visitor management systems. They have visitor camera systems. They have automatic notification system. You name it, A-Plus Technology out of Bayshore of New York has everything. So give them a look up, A-PlusTechnology.com. Fantastic. Blue Magazine. Been talking about them for a long time. I've been writing for Blue Magazine for a long time, and it's a great law enforcement journal. So if you ever want to read something about law enforcement, you want to get some unique perspectives, go to www.thebluemagazine.com. And if you get a chance, check out my website, jpangaro.com. That's the letter J, P as in Peter, A-N-G-A-R-O.com. We do safety and security training, threat assessments, employee development, you name it, I try and do the right thing and help you run your business better, help you run your organization better, etc. So give us a look out there and take a look at all of our sponsors. It's very important. We are also on Facebook. You can find Chasing Justice on Facebook, and you'll see a picture of handsome Lieutenant Joe there. And befriend us, and we'd like to do some conversations. All right, so here we are in round two, and we're back in the neighborhood. Hello, boys. How's everybody here? We got our man of faith, Bill Dallas here. William, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Joe.
And you're rocking that, I guess that's a Hawaiian kind of a shirt you got there today.
That's fantastic. An original,
I believe it. That's fantastic, from Hawaii or something. And I also have our Mr. America over here. I loved his comment last week. He said, if it goes fast, I'll drive it. That would be Jack Patterson. Jack, how are you today?
Hey, Joe. Good. How are you doing?
Very good. Gents, in our first segment today, when I opened up, there's some things have been going on, kind of topical in our government, in our country. And we're talking about the retirement of Justice Kennedy from the United States Supreme Court. Very important. It potentially changes the trajectory of our country. Elections matter. When you vote for somebody, there's all the things that come with it. And I know in the last election, a lot of the Republicans were very concerned about Donald Trump because his history was not necessarily as that of a conservative. He's kind of gone back and forth over the years. But he declared himself to be a Republican and said he would appoint very conservative justices. And when he appointed Neil Gorsuch, he came through on that promise. One thing you got to say about the guy, he comes through on his promises more than anybody in elective office that I've ever seen. And now he has an opportunity to replace Justice Kennedy. Justice Kennedy was considered a swing vote, kind of like Sandra Day O'Connor was back in the day. He was an appointee by a Republican administration, and he was expected to be very conservative in his rulings. But unfortunately, he became that swing guy where he voted with the liberal side of the court on many occasions on very, very important decisions, how things changed in our country. Justice Kennedy was that swing vote that swung it 5-4. So in recent decisions, he's also been that swing vote one way or the other. But now he's going to be leaving. And President Trump is going to have an opportunity to appoint his second Supreme Court justice. Now, this is a legacy. When you appoint a Supreme Court justice, if you appoint a 70-year-old guy, you might get 10 years out of him. But if you appoint somebody who's in their 30s or their 40s, like he's considering doing, you could have 40 years of justice making decisions that are in line with your political thinking. It's a very powerful thing to be able to do. And we see our friends on the left are absolutely losing their minds over his potential picks. They're already saying they're not going to do the process. They're screaming. I saw Chuck Schumer screaming the other day. Remember the rule the Republicans set up. You don't pick a justice when there's an election coming up. Now, that's not what they said there, Chucky boy. What they had said was, you don't do that right before a presidential election. This is a midterm election for Congress, and you think it's going to be a blue wave and you're going to take over. But I don't know. I think a lot of people, like the first time around with Trump, are not being honest to pollsters because they get picked on. You see what happens when you're a Trump person. You get chased out of restaurants. Your family gets harassed. People show up with bullhorns. So I think a lot of people are not saying what they're going to do this coming election day. But anyway, the point is the Republicans have now said they're going to push through whoever this nominee is, and they need to fight for it. This is a moment of truth for our country. Now, when I say that here in the neighborhood, boys, what I'm trying to say is it's not that I'm saying it has to be a conservative, but a conservative has a tendency to be someone who looks at the Constitution and then looks at the law and see if the law that they're trying to enact is constitutional, unlike our friends on the left who use the Supreme Court and all the federal courts to advance their agendas. They use courts to do things that they could not do legislatively. And that's what they're so crazy about, because they think a lot of these things they've pushed that they know really would not make constitutional muster are now going to be overturned, and in the future, they're not going to be able to push things through. So, who'd like to go first here? Big Billy's raising his hand. He's jumping up and down. You got to see him. It's ridiculous looking, but I'm going to let you go first. Go ahead, because you're very excited.
I just have one comment to make, really. I just want to make my point, and then my buddy Jack, he can expand on it all he wants. This is the first time that we've had, first time in a long time, that we've had an opportunity to finally have a conservative-leaning Supreme Court. And my goodness, why can't we take advantage of that? This country has got to go in that direction, because this is a country that was built on conservative values, and That's all I got to say. Anybody who's going to vote, they better vote the way they need to be voted.
Well, you're absolutely right, Billy. And I think what I see, though, there in your point is very clear. This is our moment. You would think we have a 51-vote majority. They got rid of the, filibuster rule. So 51 can vote against 49. The problem is the Democrats and the liberals, we know where they stand. We have a problem in our own party. We have these rhino Republicans, these not really Republicans. They're really Democrats pretending to be Republicans, and they betray us, and not just us going on the conservative side. They betray our entire country by doing this stuff. Jack?
Romney.
Go ahead.
Oh. Romney? I'm sorry. Something in my throat. I believe Supreme Court going conservative would be a good thing. Because I honestly believe that what had happened when Obamacare was put through, I don't believe it was constitutional. And I believe the Supreme Court should have stood up and looked at their ruling a little bit better, a little bit closer, to find out that the majority of the American people did not want it. I don't know about everybody out there who's listening right now, how this affected them, but my health care has gone through the roof, and the amount of health care that I can receive for the money has really plummeted. It's really awful. I think in a conservative Supreme Court would have looked at this in a different manner.
Well, you're right. And at the time, I remember the Republicans all said this was not constitutional because it was a tax. And the Obama people were defiant. They didn't want to say they were taxing anybody. It's not a tax. It's not a tax. What the court came out, a conservative judge came out and said, oh, it is a tax. Therefore, you have the power to tax. So therefore, it's constitutional. And that's how it went through.
Let's get back to the basics of the country, though, Joe. My point being is this. I'm not going to go with the town council meeting on every single little thing that that we have to decide upon in this country. But I think it's something as important as sweeping health care should have been something that was put on to the vote, to the American people, for us to decide. Not another pork barrel, but yet something that was just there on a ballot where we could decide whether we wish to continue our medical care in the way that it was or come across with this subsidized system.
You mean like Obamacare? Nancy Pelosi saying, you don't have to read it, just push it through.
Right, and the reality was, their goal on the left was not to, there was 10 or 15 million people that didn't have adequate health care. Now that seems like a lot of people, but in the course of our entire country, we could have had some type of catastrophic insurance for those people. We could have included them in a Medicare expansion of some kind, and left our system the way it was. People were happy with their system. There was 10 or 15 million people who needed coverage. We could have found a way to do that.
And point being, we could have done that without going socialist.
Well, that's what the people on our friends on the left, controlling 1/6 of the United States economy is what happens when you take over healthcare. And that's what they wanted to do. If you read any of the socialist Marxist writings, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist, look it up, ladies and gentlemen, you will see that they tell you, take over healthcare and you control the people's lives. Well, this is exactly what Mr. Obama, who was a socialist, as is the majority of the Democrat Party now, unfortunately, that's what they wanted to do, control that health care so they can control everything else about what's going on. Not because they're evil. They just happen to think that socialism is appropriate and it would be the best if they got to be in control of it. I disagree very strongly. Could somebody please tell me now with a drum roll, when and where can we find a socialist country where everything is hunky-dory and great? And don't point to these tiny little countries that are totally homogeneous and got 300,000 people in them and go, look at them, they're perfect. It never works. It ends up being tragedy for all the people. Let's say Venezuela. Let's just see what's going on down there. There's the utopian thing taken to its obvious end.
But in the socialist system, there's no one left to pay the bill.
Well, that's it. They take everybody's money until they run out of people's money to take, and then it's too late.
What's frightening is just last week, this week or last week, in New York, they had one of the zones up there, one of the regions up there, had elected a Democrat socialist.
Yes, and she's openly a Democrat socialist.
Yes.
In my opening remarks, I talk about her. She seems like a very nice young woman.
But very intelligent.
When you listen to her, her points of view are extremely naive and lack of life experience. And I don't say that in a negative way, because I'm just saying there's a lot of 28-year-olds that are brilliant. But the reality is, when you listen to her talk about it, would be good for everyone to have health care. It would be good for everyone to have free college. It would be good, you know, it'd be good for everyone to have a brand new Cadillac for free. I would love that. Let's all go to Bermuda for 2 weeks. That would be great. It would be great to have everything for free. Who is going to pay that bill? You know how much college costs? Even community college? How are they going to give that away for free?
In socialism, there's no one left to pay the bill.
Right.
Well, you can find all the illegals that are coming through, getting driver's licenses, getting college educations. That's free.
Well, unfortunately, we just saw here in New Jersey here, you know, because it's the Jersey neighborhood we got over here. In the Jersey neighborhood, the new governor, Murphy, has said that he wants to give free college education to illegals. This is problematic. I have children who are attending college, and it is costing me an arm and a leg, literally. It's costing me money I don't have that I have to find a way to make up so that they can get an education. And people coming in illegally are getting free college education. How does this benefit America? I don't get that.
My son's been out of college for 10 years. He's still paying off his college loan.
Right. 10 years.
My son just graduated this year, and Murphy was his keynote speaker. I have to say that he was genuine. He didn't go into his policies. He didn't go into any rants. But he was very, very nice to everyone, very cordial, and a very good keynote speaker. But then for him to come out and say this after just being the keynote speaker at his graduation, to say that the people who are here illegally are going to get free college after being the keynote speaker to a bunch of kids who just paid for their college... It's a little ludicrous.
It's tough to take when you say that.
It's hard to swallow.
And again, we said this in other episodes when we talked. I have nothing against these people. They want to come to this country because it's better for their family. Do it legally. Do it absolutely legally, and that's the way to go. So, Billy, I know you have a couple other things you were looking at. You want to get into the neighborhood, and we could spend, obviously, all day on these topics, but something else is going on out there in the world. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, on March 24th, the same day that 21 people came together at the museum in Washington to talk about guns in a very intelligent way, bringing both sides to the table to talk about it. The same day, the March for Our Lives brought thousands together in support of gun control. The student-led demonstrations that took place all over the country happened after the February shooting down at Parkland High School. Now, you've got gun control issues going on. You've got the students that are getting involved in areas that I would be willing to bet half of them don't know the one fact from another. And then, again, on the opposite side of the spectrum, you've got here in New Jersey, I don't know what knucklehead allowed this, but now fireworks are legal. You know, you talk about gun control. Now you got fireworks that are no longer under anybody's control, other than the fact that you have to be 16 or better to get them. You can't have aerial fireworks, but you can buy a device that's $5.99 that looks exactly like a hand grenade, and it will admit it's a smoke bomb. That's exactly what
that's
it
fantastic.
Is.
That's fantastic. Just
imagine
what we need.
Imagine taking one of those things, some 17-year-old rolling it down the halls of the high school. Come
creating
on.
Creating a panic.
That's crazy.
It is.
And Bill and I discussed earlier today about that same issue. If you were to take one of those smoke bombs and roll it in a movie theater, I think it's just as bad as yelling fire.
Oh, absolutely. Oh. It is a terrorist incident if you do a thing like that. You're causing panic. At very least, it's disturbing the peace.
Unfortunately, how long before that happens?
Well, now that they're legal, I'm going to say it's going to happen within a couple of weeks, I would guess.
Well, look, now, Jack and I, as we were talking about it earlier, down south, they were brought up with fireworks. They were brought up with firearms. And now, to them, it's not a big deal. But up here, you know, you all of a sudden, somebody who has no idea about fireworks other than little firecrackers and sparklers, they get their hands on something like this. They don't know how to handle it with respect. you know, it's like the caveman finally understanding how much respect we need to give for fire.
Well, it's interesting you say that because as a police officer, we would do the security at our town's 4th of July events, Memorial Day, and they always had great big fireworks displays. Of course, you bring in a professional company, right?
Right.
So I would go back as the OIC. I would go and, you know, make sure everything was secure before the event started. And I go in the back, and there's the guy setting up the fireworks. And they called him Three Fingers Louie. Because he's missing fingers on both of his hands. And he was an older guy, you know, old style fireworks guy. And I said, what happened? He says, oh, that's just part of doing the job. When you're with fireworks, you blow things off. And so now, over the years, we're going to hear, every one of us is going to hear on 4th of July, we're going to hear about incidents of kids blowing off parts of their hands, their fingers, losing an eye. It happens every single year. And New Jersey just invited this. What was the purpose of this?
But will they be as excited to get rid of fireworks as they are of getting rid of firearms? I recently ran into a nurse that I happened to know, and she said that our local hospital is going to have double staff on 4th of July evening for various accidents, vascular surgeons, reattachment specialists,
oh my gosh,
nurses, eye care specialists are going to be doubled at the hospitals for 4th of July, knowing that the kids and adults, let's not take us out of the picture, don't truly know what they're doing with fireworks, because unlike in Virginia and North Carolina and what have you, have known about these things and have seen how to use them correctly since they're little, this is going to be our first year attempt at blowing things up.
Yes, and I think fingers and toes and eyeballs are going to be included in that list. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much here in the neighborhood. I appreciate your input on things. I'd like to ask you to stay around for segment number three, round three, because there's something I would like to talk about in reference to the 4th of July and several other things that are coming up. So if you can stay, that would be great. On a personal note, I would like to say here on Chasing Justice, I would like to say my condolences go out to my cousins, the Kroniak family. We lost a matriarch last night. My Aunt Elle, she was my dad's sister, 86 years old, I believe. Absolutely a spitfire. I think the woman was all of 5'5", and she was a tornado. She was absolutely a wonderfully loving individual that had a big, beautiful, wonderful family. The Kroniak family is just a tremendous group of people. They're all good, decent human beings. And they lost their mom last night, my Aunt Elle, and we're all going to miss her very much. So if you get a chance to say a prayer for Aunt Elle. And we'll be right back to round three here on Chasing Justice.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
And welcome back to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Now, I've asked some of the boys from the neighborhood, the Jersey boys, to stay into the third round here. And we also have with us, that's right, the contrarian showed up, Jim Giordano. I don't know what he was doing. He disagreed with us so much over our topics in segment two that he wouldn't come in until segment three. Can you believe that? That is a contrarian.
He disagreed with our start time.
Well, okay, see, we told him three, and he said no five, and then we said no two, and then 1 o'clock, so who knows? We're out there. On segment three here, what we'd like to talk about is coming up very, very soon is the 4th of July, Independence Day. And I think it's been a subject of many of my columns. I write about a topic that I call Approaching the Crossroad. And as I watch things that are going on in our country, I think at this point, not only have we reached the crossroad, but we have made a decision and made a turn. We are no longer all on the same side, just finding different ways to get to answers. We are now completely different. We have an entire movement now on the left that really is a socialist, Marxist group of people who, that's where they want us to go. They're no longer hiding it. The news media is not hiding it. We don't see stories day and night. Now, here's what I would say, fellas. If there was a story that came out that said ICE is doing really bad things to people down at the border, all right, a real newspaper reporter, and I'm a writer, I investigate things, I'd say, okay, what's going on? Well, they're yanking babies out of mothers' hands, and they're throwing them in cages, and then they're doing all this other bad stuff to them. I'd say, wow, that sounds really bad. Why don't I go down there and take a look? And then I'll go down and see what's actually going on. Then I'll find out from the people who are doing what they're doing, why are you doing this? And when they tell me, well, because it's the law, and that's what people voted for, and that's what we want to take place because we don't want illegal aliens pouring over the border, so we're trying to tighten up our border, I might report the story that it's really difficult to see these kind of things happen, but they're not ripping babies out of mother's hands. You're having people come in for the second time being charged with a felony. When you're charged with a felony, that means you're under arrest, all right? If you steal $205 worth of candy, that's a felony, and you get arrested. If you have your children with you, they're removed from you, and they're sent to foster care or to somebody else to pick them up. They don't get to go with you to the local county jail. So that's what's going on down on the border. So it's amazing because this is the law, and I would explain the law, and at the end, people would say, wow, I can make a decision about what I think about that because now I have facts, not just saying it's horrible because Trump wants to rip babies out of mother's hands because he just hates everybody. This is how our media is. We have made a movement. We are now in a battle for what America will become for our children and our grandchildren. Will it be the bastion of freedom that it has become since its founding? Or are we now headed down that socialist model? The girl that was elected in Queens, New York is an open socialist like Bernie. Now there's two. She's going to win. Her election isn't yet, but she will win because it's a very left-wing community where she's running for, so she will certainly get elected to that position. So we will have two openly socialist people in our country. The thing that people are saying, the reason she got elected is because the demographics have switched so much in that district that this tired old white guy is no longer the representative of the people there. They're younger, they're more progressive, and they're also a lot of people of different backgrounds. And now this is what we're seeing as the wave of the future, which goes along with my statement I made last week that the Democrats are really looking into bringing all these illegals because they know they're going to vote Democrat and it's just going to wipe out the Republican Party. So, our contrarian, you've heard what I had to say.
I can't agree with it anymore.
Okay, here we go. Go ahead, contrarian, how are you?
This morning I was listening to the news and they were interviewing younger people on the beach going to work. And the simple question was, what does the year 1776 signify? And one, I know they went through the crowd and they picked out the ones who don't know, but I was shocked to see how many young people do not understand the Declaration of Independence and the War of Independence. I also take an issue with you about the woman in New York. She's a progressive. I don't like that word. She's not a socialist. She's a communist. She's a Marxist. If you read the 25 tenets of the Communist Party that came out of the Soviet Union when the Soviet Union was hardcore communism, those are the same tenets. It's the plank of the Democratic Party.
So what you're saying is that it's masked, and we've now become, socialism has now been acceptable. Younger people, as we've cited, the polls say, about 60% of people under 30 now say that socialism would be an acceptable form of government. So now they put that face on communism.
That's right? Exactly right. Look at Venezuela.
So you're not actually contradicting what I'm saying. I'm just clearing it up so it makes sense when you say it.
Oh, I thought I agreed with you.
No, you didn't. Thank you.
Communism doesn't sound good. Socialism sounds a little more acceptable.
And why is that, Bill? Why does that? What sounds acceptable?
It's a war of words. You know, you're trying to win the hearts and the minds of the next generation that's coming up. They're the ones that are going to be the politicians and the lawmakers, and they want to get them on board. That's all it is.
Well, what community is it here in the... I saw it the other day, and they're saying 16 years old, they're going to allow them to vote. They're going to give 16-year-olds the vote. Now, now 16 is a very nice age. There's a lot of very, very smart 16-year-olds. But 16-year-olds are easily swayed by all of this good feeling, nonsense kind of stuff that leads to problems.
But yet they're raising the age to buy cigarettes. That's crazy.
Well, you know, that's a whole other thing. Cigarettes are detrimental to people and they hurt you. They really do.
Yeah. So socialism is too.
Well, socialism will kill you. That's true. Eventually, okay, you just like cigarettes.
Well, think about it. 16-year-olds have all been inculcated, indoctrinated into the school systems, which is heavily socialistic. They haven't had life experience yet to realize what a bad direction socialism is, not only for the country, but for people in general.
But Jim, isn't it better that if there's a sandwich, that we split it in half and two people get to eat the sandwich? Why would one person get the sandwich? Why don't we give it to two people? Wouldn't that be better?
Well, who's given it? Nobody's given any sandwiches to anybody.
Well, I make a sandwich, and I have a whole big fat sandwich for myself, and you haven't eaten in 3 days. Wouldn't it be better to just take half of my sandwich, because it's so big, and give it to you? And now we take both of us.
It'd be better if I gave you half my sandwich out of the goodness of my heart.
Oh, but you don't have a good heart, and you don't want to give it to me, so I go hungry. How is that right?
But you're sending the signal that people don't have to do anything in this country. This is...
Everything's a handout.
It's a handout. And you want to know something? People are not going to do anything. It's like that old story where the teacher said, okay, I'll give everybody a C. And nobody did any work. No, and whereas if there's competition, which is more of a capitalistic idea, where people will work for their grades.
Which is great. And I know you weren't here until now when you didn't hear my opening comments. What I talked about is that the people that are that believe that kind of stuff, I think that they're good and decent people. They may be naive, and they just want the best for everyone. And it's not fair that somebody has more than others. And my point in my opening, and maybe you guys can address this here a little bit, what I said was, when I was making $15,000 a year in 1982, I wanted a job that paid $18,000. I thought I'd be fat. And I got a job that paid $35,000. Well, now, as an adult, I've moved along and my income is substantial. I can imagine somebody making $50,000 and they're living a life, they're renting an apartment, they're eating, they're feeding themselves. They would look at my income and they would say, well, if we took half of that, you'd still have a lot more than me and you'd be able to live. Why is it fair you have all of that? And this is where I think they see this. They're trying to make this fit. How can one person have so much and another has just enough to live?
Well, that's one of the problems with this generation that's coming up. And it's sad because they all have a sense of entitlement. You know, they've seen that how one political party will give and give and give, and all they got to do is vote one way. They don't have to do anything else. And there was a woman, it's funny, but it's sad too. When she was all across social media on YouTube and everything, and I got my Obama phone. I got my Obama phone. Now, how is that helping her?
Well, because she couldn't otherwise afford a phone, and Obama gave her a phone. And that people that don't have things want things. I get that.
And do you see how many people that are on unemployment, and they've all got cell phones, and they all smoke, and the price of cigarettes, it doesn't matter to them. You know, it's crazy. The world is turning upside down.
So this is the crux of, I think, the problem. We have a younger generation, and they're reflecting what we've taught them. We were talking earlier before we got on the show is how we rode motorcycles, and we all shot guns, and we went to the woods when we were 12 years old shooting guns. My son is 35 years old and an attorney, and I would not let him take a gun and go into the woods with a motorcycle to this day because that's what we've kept our kids from doing. But you're how do we reconcile those who need and don't have
Not all of us taught them. Some of us taught our kids values, a good work ethic. You don't get something for nothing. You got to earn your way. When I said my son had a big payoff for his college education, he's still paying it off. He worked darn hard to get to that point. And you know, I helped him a little bit, but he earned it because he had a good work ethic. And that's what a lot of these kids don't have. They have that sense of entitlement instead.
So, Jack, where are we going here? How do we How do we stem this tide? And how do we help those who need, and maybe they don't have the abilities that the four of us sitting around this table have, and they just can't do the things they need to do? How do we take care of them? Don't we have to help these people?
Well, you know, it's not necessarily that we have to help these people, but we do. In my own personal experience, I've had in an old neighborhood that I used to live in, I saw three generations living in the same home. They were all on welfare. We spoke to them on a number of occasions, very nice people. They didn't care about the price of a gallon of gas. They didn't care about the price of a loaf of bread or a gallon of milk. They didn't care how many children they had. It didn't make a difference as to how much money they received, to how much disposable income they had, as to how many children they would have. Whereas right now, you've got kids coming up, young people. We all have children. And some of these children are actually having to make a decision in their life that they're no longer going to have what they wanted to have, which was three children, because they can't afford it. Mm-hmm. And that is a terrible, terrible thing. Mm-hmm. That shouldn't be.
Oh, we got dogs in the neighborhood now. You never know what's going to pop up here and what's just going on. Jack, your point is well taken. Things have to change based on the circumstances that's around you. When the economy went bad for the last 8 or 9 years, jobs were scarce. People lost everything. And we saw changes in how people behaved. We saw buying patterns. We saw what people did, vacations, everything changed because they didn't have those things. Now the economy's picking up. When that picks up, are we going to see everyone that was out of work start to go back? Is it a better lifestyle to work, or is it a better lifestyle to get that subsistence check, which is just barely enough to live?
Well, the point being with that subsistence check is that is a choice. And our contrarian might say different. But that is a choice, because that younger generation, that second generation that was living in that home, had the opportunity to attend college for free, mm-hmm, and did not take advantage of that, and decided to just collect welfare and do nothing, instead of going on to school and breaking the cycle, changing the pattern, making a better life for themselves.
So, Jim, does that go to Bill's point that guidance is what people need? You know, do they need guidance to tell them to work hard?
Who's going to guide? The government?
No, the parents. No, the families.
Of course. The problem is now somebody's parents have been raised into this ideology, and they're professing to their children the same thing that they're living, and which I mean, as we just mentioned, they want to live off the system.
Mm-hmm. But what kind of a life is that, living off the system? You don't get a ton of money living off. You get enough to eat. You get enough food.
Well, this is the point.
But barely.
This is socialism that is existing right now. We're talking about a future that may turn socialist. We're talking about a socialist system that's already in place. Mm-hmm. These people are already using this system.
Well, to that degree, you're right, I guess.
This is where crime comes in, because you got people that are on welfare. They're collecting at minimum jobs, minimum wages, and they're being paid under the table by people who don't want to have to pay the higher wages, and as a result, they collect any unemployment. They're able to buy their cigarettes and their whatever else. But the whole thing is, it's got to come from the top down. People have got to start doing the right thing. You know, it's mind-boggling that some of the parents,
the parents
in a lot of issues, like you were saying before, a parent now is, I'm just so passionate about this thing.
When you think about that for a second, and let me see if I can help you now. I help Jim, I'll help you and clarify. I think the point that we're all trying to make here is that we are changed our path. Our trajectory has changed in our country. We have a different mindset than all of us probably grew with, and we definitely what our parents grew up with. Mm-hmm. Our parents did not consider not going to work. I remember my grandfather's, grandfather's age generation, people talking about that. My father-in-law talking about it, would never think of taking a handout. Did not would make rock soup if he had to and feed his family with that, as opposed to taking a handout. Where today, it's like, it's a good get over. Mm. You're saying there's a black market for jobs and all kinds of things, and people are paying under the table. But hey, I can collect a bunch of checks, I can get some money, and I can also go work quietly and get cash in my pocket so I can have the lifestyle I want.
And it's the parents who are part of that system. Now their kids are being brought up in that same lifestyle. You're getting a generation after generation of people that the system is supporting.
You know, one of my favorite movies is Cinderella Man, about a boxer who actually was in New Jersey. And for the people who haven't seen it, he became very successful boxing. He actually won the heavyweight title. When he won his first fight, he actually took the money and brought it back to social services. And gave it back to the government.
That's a different mindset.
We don't have that anymore right. In this country.
That's so, you know, one of the things that we like to talk about is solutions. So if you get a chance, reach out to jpangaro@americaoutloud.com. We'd like to hear from you. I want to thank the fellows from the neighborhood, and I want to thank Jim for stopping by. We missed you during the neighborhood segment, and I'm sure all of America missed you too out there, Jim. Remember our sponsors, A-Plus Technology. So it's aplustechnology.com. jpangaro.com, that's my company, thebluemagazine.com, and we also have another group out there, MCONIT, E-M-C-O-N-I-T, leaders in third-party data recovery systems. Now, before we go, we only have a couple of seconds. 4th of July is coming up, and we talked about that, so I just want to say thank you to all of our military, our police, first aid, responders, all the people who do the right thing. To our forefathers, who even though they had warts and although they had problems, they gave us the greatest nation on earth. It is now our responsibility to try and keep it. What are we going to pass on to our children and grandchildren? Are we going to pass on the ideals of what America was founded on, removed with all the negativity? Or are we going to hand them a world of socialism, which is going to drag them down to the default position of humanity, which is tyranny? And in 3 generations from now, will we never recognize America as the page has turned?
Very good, Joe.
Gents, everybody, have a great 4th of July. God bless America. And if you're not part of the solution, don't be a part of the problem. Or something like that. See you next week on Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network.